Weight Watchers now offers access to affordable GLP-1s. It works for members like...
I'm Haley, and I've lost 100 pounds. Weight Watchers has everything I need, from weight loss medications to nutrition support and help with my side effects. It's all in one place.
Weight Watchers handles the insurance for you and offers affordable cash pay options. With our program, our members are losing more weight with expert nutrition and side effect support.
I'm Mike, and I've lost 135 pounds. Weight Watchers prescribing GLP-1 medications, it's been life-changing.
I'm Sharia, and I lost 80 pounds on Weight Watchers. I realized that it would take more than a prescription to lose weight and feel good on a GLP-1.
Better results, expert support, lose more weight, make it last.
I can't imagine doing a GLP-1 without Weight Watchers.
Get started for as low as $25 at weightwatchers.com/GLP-1. For over 60 years, we've helped millions of members find what works for them. Now, it's your turn. Weight Watchers, watch it work.
Future Proof with Jonathan McRae.
Proudly supported by Research Ireland.
On News Talk.
Hello and welcome to Future Proof on News Talk. This is the show where we take a closer look at the world around us. I'm Jonathan McRae. Happy New Year. It might be New Year, New You, but it's the same old Future Proof. Lots of really interesting science coming up on this week's program. We're going to be talking about space plants, why evolution goes wrong, and Earth's early wildfires. If you'd like to get in touch with the program, you can email us, science@newstalk.com, or you can find us on Twitter. We're at News Talk Science. We get to all of those comments in the podcast. Listen and subscribe for free in the News Talk app, powered by Go Loud. Now, first up, space plants. Now, as humanity gears up for its first return to the lunar surface in more than 50 years, a global team of researchers is mapping out how plants will power long-term life beyond our planet. One of the key figures in that mission is our guest, Professor Matthew Gilliam. He's director of the Australian Research Council Centre of Excellence in Plants for Space at the University of Adelaide. He joins me now. Welcome to the programme, Matthew. It's quite exciting to think that this is going to happen soon. But just before we talk about the plants bit, what is our roadmap looking like for longer term stays on either the moon or the Mars, as far as you know?
Well, hopefully your listeners have heard of the Artemis missions. So next year, humans will be going to the moon again, but they're not going to touch down. So they're going to fly around the moon on a mission. And then the following year, in 2027, we plan to put people on the moon for the first time in 55 years. And after that, using that as a first foray back onto another surface of not the Earth, they're going to use this as a base to develop technologies for one day then going to Mars in the next, say, 20 years.
Mm. I think it's kind of funny that we've been to the moon and our technology is so much better, but we're still doing a flyby first just to be super safe.
Yeah, well, we've got better technology, as you say now, so we can learn much more about the conditions we face as humans and the conditions that will then impact humans as they start to stay longer on the lunar surface. So one thing they're actually doing in Artemis 2 is that they're monitoring the impact of radiation on bone marrow tissues. They're going to do that by both monitoring, taking samples before the astronauts go and then when they come back. But they're also going to have these in vitro models that they take with them. So these little chips that simulate, they're actually bone marrow of the astronauts. They're going to take them with them and really compare the impact of the flight. So yeah, there's so much many more technologies that we're throwing at this now, but as you say, it's been a long time.
Mm, yeah, so it's quite exciting. Let's talk about plants, because your work is trying to figure out what we need to think about and how we might be able to grow plants that can sustain life, provide medicine, and so on. Give me an idea of how tricky that is as a project.
The constraints of space, particularly around the volume allotted to that kind of activity and the competing interests, if you like, make it difficult. So the largest format at the moment that plants are grown in space is about a meter cubed, so tiny. your listeners might have seen people harvesting chilies. The astronauts, they get a lot of joy out of having some tomatoes, some fresh food, some fresh crunch. And that's what it's about, really. It's the psychology piece, that connection to Earth when you're not on the Earth's surface. However, as we go longer away, well, deeper in space, further away, and for longer durations, then we're going to need to depend on plants for all kinds of things, for food, as you say, because resupply isn't a thing anymore. It's very difficult to do. For medicines, we get a lot of medicines from our plants, but also life support in general. So the oxygen we breathe, for instance.
Yeah. My brother has a hydroponics lamp and he grows some plants in it. It's not the plants you're thinking of. It's a self-contained unit that doesn't need any sunlight. And I'm wondering how much of the puzzle we've already solved when it comes to growing plants on other planets. I mean, obviously gravity is something we'll talk about in a bit, but in terms of, oxygen, water, hydroponics, dealing with all that sort of stuff, do we already know how to make, fruit and vegetables in space?
Yeah, you're right. A lot of the technologies are developed. Some of it, in fact, has come as a direct result of research that NASA were doing 20, 30 years ago. So, for instance, the LEDs that we use in enclosed indoor horticulture now were first employed in NASA programs and developed for that for space saving. The optimal nutrition, the selection of plants that are quite well adapted to these indoor environments, that has also come from NASA and other related research over the past decades. However, plants aren't really still very well adapted to grow in these conditions. So what we are doing, and some collaborators around the world, and we'll talk about that roadmap in a minute, are starting to use biology to breed the plants specifically for these conditions. And they are the constrained space, for instance. So changing the architecture of the plants, having a lot less root system, more edible parts of the plant. So getting towards that zero waste concept. So there's a lot of biology still to do to adapt plants to the engineered systems.
Yeah, you want something that is highly edible, grows reasonably quickly, and fills up the small space it's given with edible parts. And it also needs to taste reasonably okay, right? I mean, that is a factor, I would imagine. Although I know we've talked in the program before about some research looking at bacteria as a potential food for space farers. So I suppose how it tastes is lowest down on the priority, is it?
Not really. So taste, texture are very important. When people are remote from Earth, the diet that they have at the moment on the space station is pretty monotonous. They do a really good job in terms of nutrition, but it's, a constant diet of rehydrated TV dinners, for want of a better term, but really constrained. They heat it up in a food warmer. It's a monotony of brown sludge and related kind of foods, and without that texture. So nutrition is important. The zero waste concept that you talked about, that I also mentioned, is very important because we have to use every single molecule the further we go away. Waste is going to be a massive problem. We're very constrained in what we can take. So being able to recycle every single molecule is important. And those kinds of concepts we don't really think about here on Earth. So we can chuck things away outside if we've got some leftover, or, we can use composting. There's a lot of waste in agriculture. So those kinds of concepts that we're applying for our space agriculture, we're starting to apply here on Earth to improve the sustainability of practices.
Let's talk about microgravity for a second. So obviously Earth has more mass than the moon or Mars, and so it has greater gravity. Does the fact that that there's less gravity on both of those places benefit plant production in any way?
Well, let's first talk about where there's no gravity. So around the Earth, in microgravity, if you like, the constantly in free fall, there is a massive problem for growing plants in spaceflight, outside of the gravity of the moon, Mars, and the like. Water becomes sticky and creepy. Surface tension takes over, envelops roots, envelops leaves. Plants can suffocate as a consequence. Mm. So there needs to be engineered solutions for making sure that water clings onto the surfaces other than the plant, so it's the plants are adequately oxygenated in their root system. So there's a bit of an engineering solution. As we go on to the lunar surface, so there's about a tenth of the Earth's gravity, and on the Martian surface, where there's about 40% of the Earth's gravity, water starts to behave better. The plants really don't seem to mind so much. But one thing that they do is they adapt to that reduced gravity with a reduction in the cell wall, so the stiffening, if you like, of the plant body.
I was thinking with the fibers, with the plants, leaves, fruit, would it all be much lighter because there isn't that pull and need for firm roots to suspend the plant above?
That's exactly right. So the plant somehow senses that reduction in gravity and it reduces its fiber. That can be a problem for nutrition, perhaps. So we're looking into that to see the impact of these reduced gravity environments on the nutritional qualities in terms of dietary fiber.
So I know there are solutions in science fiction for zero gravity, which are like spinning things, creating a what's the name of that?
Centrifugal force, or
centrifugal force? Yes, that's possible. Is it possible to do that with plants? Make a smaller centrifugal hydroponics thing, like swinging a tennis ball tube around with plants in it.
Yeah, as long as you don't hit it with a tennis racket, I think no, you'll be fine. No, so what we do on Earth, in fact, is use what's called clinostats and random positioning machines to simulate microgravity or lunar gravity, Martian gravity. However, they're not great at it. It's basically a constant changing vector of gravity. As you say, we could impose a sort of a mini centrifuge or a larger centrifuge on the plants in space, and in fact, spacecraft, as you say. But to be honest, we don't really need to, because even in microgravity, the plants respond to a vector, so they don't respond to gravity, but they grow perfectly well towards light, for instance, and the roots grow away. So we don't really need to. If we can solve the fiber issue by having different plants, for instance, with greater fiber, or change the composition in a way, that's a better solution than a very complex engineered solution to impose gravity.
Talk to me finally about the roadmap you were talking about. There's a sort of international collaboration to try and figure this out in a reasonable amount of time. What does that look like?
Well, we've come together as a community to figure out the essential bits of research that we need to do, of the technological developments that are needed over the next, say, 5-10 years to make larger scale plant production in space a possibility. At the moment, there's pockets of excellence around the world that work on this issue, and it's really about pooling resources, because what we're doing is not necessarily something that is without cost. However, what we're doing here, as I said earlier, the lessons that we're learning will also benefit here on Earth, our ability to produce with zero waste, with reduced resources, with all those things. And if we can grow on the lunar surface, for instance, we can grow in remote communities around the Earth. We can grow in aid sites. We can grow in Australia. We have a problem with food insecurity in our remote indigenous communities, for instance. So 51% of those families are food insecure, which is a, you know, a terrible stat that we need to solve. Military bases, all kinds of things we can grow these plants in those conditions. So it's those lessons through the innovation that we need in this, you know, really difficult scenario will help us here on Earth.
Yeah, and that is continuing a long history of space science eking out into the world and giving us things like Teflon and the World Wide Web and so on. Professor Matthew Gilliam from the University of Adelaide and the Australian Research Council of Excellence in Plants for Space, thanks for your time.
Thank you. It was a pleasure.
Weight Watchers now offers access to affordable GLP-1s. It works for members like...
I'm Haley, and I've lost 100 pounds. Weight Watchers has everything I need, from weight loss medications to nutrition support and help with my side effects. It's all in one place.
Weight Watchers handles the insurance for you and offers affordable cash pay options. With our program, our members are losing more weight with expert nutrition and side effect support.
I'm Mike, and I've lost 135 pounds. Weight Watchers prescribing GLP-1 medications, it's been life-changing.
I'm Sharia, and I lost 80 pounds on Weight Watchers. I realized that it would take more than a prescription to lose weight and feel good on a GLP-1.
Better results, expert support, lose more weight, make it last.
I can't imagine doing a GLP-1 without Weight Watchers.
Get started for as low as $25 at weightwatchers.com/GLP-1. For over 60 years, we've helped millions of members find what works for them. Now, it's your turn. Weight Watchers. Watch it work.